Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 24, Matsya, the Lord's Fish Incarnation, Text Number 54. Shri Shukuvacha, Ityuktavantam Ripatim, Bhagavan Adi Purusha, Matsya Rupi Mahambodau, Viharam Sattvam Abravid. Translation, because there's no purport, I'm not going to go through the word for word. We're going to finish the chapter today. Read through all eighth canto. Soon we'll be up to the 12th. Shukadeva Goswami continued, when Satyavrata had thus prayed to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who had assumed the form of a fish, the Lord, while moving in the water of inundation, explained to him the absolute truth. Translation 55. The Supreme Personality of Godhead thus explained to King Satyavrata the spiritual science known as Sankhya Yoga, the science by which one distinguishes between matter and spirit. In other words, Bhakti Yoga. Along with the instructions contained in the Puranas, the old histories, and the Samhitas, the Lord explained himself in all these literatures. While sitting on the boat, King Satyavrata, accompanied by the great saintly persons, listened to the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in regard to self-realization. These instructions were all from the eternal Vedic literature, Brahma. Thus, the king and the sages had no doubt about the absolute truth. At the end of the last inundation during the period of Svayambhuva Manu, the Supreme Personality of God had killed a demon named Harigriva and delivered all the Vedic literatures to Lord Brahma when Lord Brahma awakened from sleeping. King Satyavrata was illuminated with all Vedic knowledge by the mercy of Lord Vishnu, and in this period he has now taken birth as Vaivashvata Manu, the son of the sun god. So now we get a little understanding that our present, we're in the age of Vaivashvata Manu, so we know that this is actually King Satyavrata, who was on a boat previously, and with the sages. Which sages are those? The Saptarishis, that's right. And they had heard transcendental knowledge from Matsya, from Krishna in the form of Matsya. So we happen to have our Manvantara we can be proud of, Vaivashvata, and he's the Manu. And in the age of Vaivashvata Manu, the sun god is named who? Vivashvan, that's right. And who is the king of the heavenly planets? Yeah, Purnachandra. Etc. Yamaraj is the head, etc. So we have in every Manvantara, there is a different set of persons who would take the place of Indra, Yamaraj, the sun god, etc. So, and also the Manu. So purport, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives his verdict that Satyavrata appeared in the Chakshusha Manvantara. When the Chakshusha Manvantara ended, the period of Vaivashvata Manu began. By the grace of Lord Vishnu, Satyavrata received instructions from the second fish incarnation and was thus enlightened in all spiritual knowledge. This story concerning the great king Satyavrata and the fish incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu is a great transcendental narration. Anyone who hears it is delivered from the reactions of sinful life. One who narrates this description of the Manvantara Matsya incarnation and King Satyavrata will certainly have all his ambitions fulfilled, spiritual ones hopefully. And he will undoubtedly return home back to Godhead. Text 61. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who pretended to be a gigantic fish. When Krishna pretends to be something, he does a really good job. If we pretended to be a fish, we wouldn't get away with it very easily. Especially the other fish would recognize us immediately. Who restored the Vedic literature to Lord Brahma when Lord Brahma awakened from sleep, and who explained the essence of Vedic literature to King Satyavrata and the great saintly persons. Purport. Here is a summary of Satyavrata's meeting with the fish incarnation of Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu's purpose was to take back all the Vedic literatures from the demon Harigriva and restore them to Lord Brahma. Incidentally, by his causeless mercy, the Lord spoke with Satyavrata. The word Satyavratanam is significant because it indicates that those on the level of Satyavrata can take knowledge from the Vedas delivered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whatever is spoken by the Supreme Lord is accepted as Veda. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Vedanta Krit Veda Vit. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the compiler of all Vedic knowledge, and he knows the purport of the Vedas. Therefore, anyone who takes knowledge from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, or from Bhagavad Gita as it is, knows the purpose of the Vedas. Vedaischa savaraham eva vedya. One cannot understand Vedic knowledge from the Veda Vada Vratas, who read the Vedas and misconstrue their subject matter. One has to know the Vedas from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 8th canto, 24th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Matsya, the Lord's Fish Incarnation. And Prabhupada has a little commentary here. This commentation has been finished in our New Delhi center today, 1st of September 1976, the day of Radhastami. For the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the Acharyas, Srila Narottam Das Thakura says, Tandera Charna Sevi Bhakti Sanivas, Janme 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 Haya, E Abhilas. I am attempting to present Srimad Bhagavatam in the English language by the order of my spiritual master, Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and by his grace the work of translation is gradually progressing, and the European American devotees who have joined the Krishna consciousness movement are helping me considerably. Thus we have expectations of finishing the great task before my passing away. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. We have an entire chapter about the fish incarnation, Matsya. And in the purport at the end, Prabhupada says, Matsya's primary purpose of incarnating was to kill Harigriva. But that's only mentioned in one verse. On the other hand, the entire chapter deals with Matsya instructing Satyavrata about transcendental knowledge, establishing himself as the supreme authority. And Prabhupada mentions that there are others who are Veda Vataratas. They take the Vedic literature in such a way as that they deny or don't deal with Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's the difference between understanding what the purpose of the Vedic literature is and taking it for something other. Generally speaking, there are three classes of people. There is those who take the Vedic literature as Krishna says, or as Shukadeva Goswami says at the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Nigama Kapaturar Galitam Palam Sukamukam Drava Samyutam Pibata Bhagavatam Amalam Mahur Mahu Bhava Bhuvikaha. The Vedic literature is like a desire tree, and we can get from whatever we want. As a matter of fact, only the fact that there is some aspect of the Vedic literature in present society that it's something like a human society. Otherwise, people would just be on the animal level. The animals never study philosophy, or very rarely. There may be an exceptional animal that's a little philosophical, but that's quite rare. And if there is such an animal, he's generally always put on YouTube so we can find out about him. But generally speaking, unfortunately, it's becoming rarer to find a human being who's interested in philosophy. But they, even if you do find such a human being, they never put him on YouTube. Generally speaking, most people are interested in material elevation. And therefore they approach, hopefully, the Vedic literature to become materially elevated. Material elevation means two things. As Krishna says, Chatura Vida Bhajante Mam, Janas Kritina Arjuna, Artha Jignasya Artharati, Jnani Chabaratara Shiva. To get free from anxiety is material elevation. It has nothing to do, perhaps, or directly has anything to do with pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead to get free from anxiety. Although, without following Krishna's instructions, it's not possible to get free from anxiety. As Krishna says, that the cause of anxiety is trivida narakasya dam dwaram nashitam atmanaha kama krodha tata lobas tasmat etam trayam chajet. There are three gates leading to hell. Lust, anger, and greed. And every sane person should become free from these three gates because they lead to the degradation of the self. And before that, we go over it, Krishna says that there's asuras, there's demigods, etc. Asuras never follow Krishna's instructions in order to get free from these gates to hell. As a matter of fact, they like to go to hell and advertise on those gates to hell, put bright lights and say, welcome, enter, your search has ended. In other words, generally speaking, nowadays, people not only are very enthusiastic to get to hell by increasing lust and anger and greed. Of course, as time goes on, we may say that lust is directed in a very specific way, or anger is directed in a specific way, or greed is directed in a specific way. But actually, it becomes all-pervading. As lust increases, you become lusty after everything. As greed increases, you become greedy for everything. And as anger increases, not only you go and destroy other countries and, you know, rob their resources, whatever, but then you start stealing from your neighbors, your own fellow citizens, and ultimately your family members and whatever. So as it increases, then it becomes more and more pervasive. Just like when devotional service increases, then it becomes more and more pervasive. As it increases in one's heart, then it becomes pervasive in one's family, in one's society dealings, in one's communal dealings, etc. So it acts the opposite way also. So those who are trying to become free from anxiety caused by lust, anger, and greed, there is a process. And the process is always to take shelter of the instructions of Krishna. Like, for instance, in a civilized society, people don't kill animals, especially the cow. Their sex life is restricted. Their mental speculation is restricted. And their intoxication is restricted. And therefore, the very causes of anxiety and all the other types of illusion caused by lust, turning into anger, turning into delusion, they gradually diminish. And then one looks for something positive to do, rather than just avoiding all the negative things, finding out, you know, restricting one's eating meat by taking a goat onto the top of a hill and then cutting its throat And then whisper, before you cut the throat though, you're supposed to whisper into the goat's ear, my dear goat, don't take offense, I love you, but I'm going to cut your throat. But don't worry about it, it's actually for your good I'm cutting your throat. May not seem like it, but you may not appreciate it now, but you'll take a human form of life. And not only that, but I'm so kind to you, just by eating your flesh, I'll have to become a goat in my next lifetime. See how nice I am. I'm willing to become a goat on your so you can become a human being, just so I can eat your flesh. So this regulation, gradually one thinks, well, I'm just wasting my time. Hopefully one thinks eventually. I'm just wasting my time eating goats because I really don't want to become a goat. It's not, but if it's part of the contract with this goat, then maybe I should go to Govinda's and try another menu. Then one tries to think, well, go to Govinda's, you know, maybe I should grow my own food, have nice prasadam, go to a place where there's sunlight, where there's fresh air, clean water. So this is also an advancement, materially speaking. Not only avoiding things that we shouldn't do, but doing the things that will make us healthy. But then after one is healthy, one still realizes I'm still not peaceful because I'm not going to die healthy. Even if I die healthy, it's not going to make any difference. It's not that I get some extra special bonus when I die healthy than if I died unhealthy. So the purpose of life, or the end of life, is death, and therefore whether I die healthy or unhealthy, it won't make any difference. So maybe there's some other objective of life. So therefore, then one comes to the point, one becomes inquisitive. Is there something beyond material existence? Within our material existence, we can do right or we can do wrong, but is there something beyond that? And that's called liberation. One becomes inquisitive. How to become liberated? Now, there are different types of persons aiming for liberation, aiming to become a Mahatma. As Krishna says, Mahajano yena katasa panta. Everyone has to choose a Mahatma. Was that? Mahat sevam dwaram ahura vimuktes tapo dwaram yoshita sangi sangam. Association with the Mahatmas is the doorway towards liberation. And there are different kinds of Mahatmas. Those are Brahmavatis, Paramatmavadis, and devotees, bhaktis. So they're all considered Mahajans or Mahatmas, great souls, because they want something beyond the material existence. Now, generally, now the question is, you can be a Brahmavadi. You won't be offensive to Krishna if you're a Brahmavadi because you just believe that Brahman is better than Krishna, that's all. But you believe in Krishna. And with the Mayavadis, they think that Brahman is real, that Brahman is real and Krishna is unreal. He's just a product of Brahman. So they're called Mayavadis. They're not so appreciated. In any case, we should choose a Mahatma where we get the best result. Because everyone has to choose someone to follow. And here it says that the Vedavataratas, although they're on a path towards self-realization, they're on that path trying to improve material existence by worship the demigods, etc., which hopefully will lead to the understanding that there's something higher than that, the liberation. But for a devotee, or one aspiring to be a devotee, hearing from such Vedavataratas will not help them, it will probably may bewilder them. And therefore, the Satyavrata was instructed by, and the rishis, by the fish incarnation, about what Krishna, that Krishna is the aim of the Vedas. Now, either we can accept Krishna as the aim of the Vedas, and everything we're doing, the aim is to please Krishna, whatever it is, or we can be, that's called a devotee, or everyone else is considered to be a non-devotee. even if one is a Brahmavadi or a Paramatmavadi, whatever, one is considered to be still a non-devotee. Now one can be Paramatma realized and be a devotee. If we understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of the Super Soul in our heart, we can be devoted to the Super Soul and serve Him. But if we think we're going to become the Super Soul, that's a problem in terms of becoming a devotee. We're already devoted to ourselves. So if we're devoted to ourselves in the form of Brahman, we think we're Brahman, or we think we're Paramatma, that type of self-adoration and appreciation and worship doesn't get us very far. It gets us farther than we get when we worship this body, which gets us nowhere, or maybe gets us in places we shouldn't be. But it's not a complete realization. It may be a step towards understanding Krishna. But again, there's two things. Either we worship Krishna and we devote our energies to Him, or we are on a path to worshiping ourselves, basically speaking, because that's what it comes down to in different forms. One gives us, if we're on a path towards actually finding out who we really are, that's good. But if we're on a path to finding out who Krishna is, that's much more complete. And therefore Krishna instructed the sages and instructed Satyavrata what the actual aim of the Vedas is. Yomam eva asamudo janati purushottama sasarvavit pradante imam sarvabhavena bhavata. That anyone who understands this, anyone who understands this without a doubt is said to be the knower of everything, and therefore engages himself in full devotional service, O son of Bharata. Iti guyatma shastram idam yuktva mayanaga etam bhutva buddhivat sat krita kritas shivarata. That this is the most confidential part of all the Vedic literature, and whoever understands this becomes wise, and his endeavors will know perfection. So our philosophy is quite simple, but because people don't accept it very easily, therefore we have to have so many different details added to them to try and convince them that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and all that it means. Now that we say, oh, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and we wish Him well and we go on with our business. Good luck in doing your service as God, you know, whatever you're doing, but I got my activities also. No, being God also has its implications. Which it makes it a problem for the conditioned soul to accept. Like He's a proprietor of everything. So that's a big one. It may take us a few lifetimes to accept that one. And even the little details, all right, Krishna is the proprietor of everything. Well, that's too much. I mean, maybe during the Bhagavatam class for a second or two I accept it and say, yeah, that's right, Krishna is the proprietor. And then after we walk out of class we think, where's my pen? Who took my pen? You rascal, you took my pen. You're going to hell. I'm a Brahmin, see? You read that story about King Riga, right? You're finished. So the implications, then it goes down, all right, you can't accept Krishna as God and everything is matrivat paradareshu, paradwareshu, losrivat, atmavat sarvabhuteshu, yakpashiti sapandita. All right, you can't accept that Krishna is the proprietor, but at least try to accept that you're not the proprietor. You don't know who the proprietor is. You don't really believe in Krishna to the extent to think this is Krishna's book. This is his body. Anyhow, forget it, you know. We're joint proprietors. All right, but at least accept that we're not the proprietor. That every lady that we look at is not my potential wife. Matrivat paradareshu. That we should see every lady as our potential mother. Mother means, in the Veda culture at least, that we're the servant of the mother. That the mother tells us what to do and we do it. To a certain extent, of course. And that every lady should see every man except for her husband to be just like her son, vice versa. Or maybe father in some reason, if he happens to be a father. So every lady except for one's wife to see as one's mother, and to see everyone else's property except for one's own is garbage in the street. Some degree of detachment to see everyone, every living entity as being a spiritual being like oneself. So that's not the highest realization, but it may be the realizations that people are comfortable to work under and make progress towards accepting Krishna eventually. So there are different visions, there are different conceptions, there are different knowledge given to different people with different perspectives, so they can have different convictions and therefore different skills in working in the material world and develop different states of character, hopefully to bring them to the mode of goodness where they can accept devotional service and accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So directly and indirectly, as it says in the Upanishads, we're searching after knowledge to bring us to Krishna eventually. But for those who are already in devotional service, it's not necessary to go and study from the Veda Vadarasas. Those who don't believe in Krishna, who worship the demigods, those who are interested in personal Brahman realization, etc. It's not helpful for those who actually are trying to be convinced that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead to try to imagine that we might be God. It's rasa-bhasa. We should try to accept the position of the servant of the servant of the servant of God, Krishna, accept that those as our leaders, those as our instruction, and try to develop that humility, that devotion, that understanding that will bring us to becoming a servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna, and help others gain that same understanding too. Although we don't decry, we understand how other processes are meant to bring people to a point where they can at least gratify their senses in a more subtle way or gain knowledge so they can actually get out of the gross and subtle gratifications, come to Brahman realization, then take shelter of Paramatma, then take shelter of Krishna eventually. So it says in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that there is a process Krishna even gives in the Bhagavad Gita of indirectly understanding him. But for those who are taking shelter of Krishna through the direct method, that should be emphasized, just the direct method, and not try through the indirect methods so far. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments?
Thank you for your lecture, Maharaj. I have a question. If you set on the path of devotion, you try to know Krishna and serve him. Is your past karma erased? As you said with the goat example, can you still be born as a goat as we all here have all probably eat meat in the past? Is erased?
Yes, even
karma?
If you're born of a goat, you'll be one of those goats who understands philosophy.
That's just example.
Well, I can't say I'm not Yamaraj. You have to pose that question to Yamaraj. He has more experience in these things than I do.
No, but if our karma is previous karma, what
but we get rid of it. I mean, it said if we actually know Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even theoretically, and we chant Hare Krishna or take prasadam with that, then we're guaranteed the uniform of life.
Uh-huh. Okay.
There's no, but we shouldn't take advantage of that and say, well, you know, I really like goat meat. I eat it only once every month, and I chant my rounds afterwards. We have to be a little cautious because Bharat Maharaj, Krishna chastised him personally because somehow or another he got the wrong idea. So if the Yamadutas come, take us away and say, you're going to become a goat. And you say, wait a second, I chanted my rounds. Sorry, Krishna sent us here. You have something to learn. So we shouldn't take, I mean, that's the general principle. that we're practically guaranteed a human form of life, but we shouldn't take advantage of it. Otherwise, we will misuse that guarantee.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Okay, so questions from Avadhuta Raya. So first, Dhruva Maharaj is compared to a neophyte devotee with material desires who had a great determination to practice austerities to attain the mercy of the Supreme Lord. Nowadays, devotees who have some material desires don't have such determination like Dhruva. Why?
Because Dhruva was a brahmachari. He was only 5 years old. He wasn't distracted. There's no internet. There are no nice little 5-year-old girls to distract him. So his mind was fixed. What was there to do? What was in his existence? There's nothing. That was going to distract him. So he could concentrate his mind completely in that determination. Besides that, he was a kshatriya. He wasn't some, little kid born in the street. He was born into a royal family with great, ancestors, great, even 5 years old by the time he's five, great examples. And therefore he was in a very noble family and he had great inheritance. He was able to have that kshatriya spirit and that determination even from birth. He wasn't born in Kali Yuga, especially.
Okay, thank you. So there is a second question also. In Utasha Mai, one is
Utasha Mai.
Yes, okay. One is enthusiastic, but with pride. Does it necessarily happen that one will lose this initial enthusiasm, or it can go on for longer or even forever, but in a purified way?
Oh, that's the whole idea. The idea is not to lose one's enthusiasm, but to find out the process of maintaining it. Being puffed up, it's not that the neophyte devotee is able to walk around all day long just being puffed up with enthusiasm. Now, if we're proud, we become proud of our enthusiasm, we fall down immediately. But there's enthusiasm. Without that enthusiasm in the beginning, that enthusiasm is the seed of enthusiasm. It's not the full manifestation of enthusiasm. Unless Krishna gives us some special mercy from our past lives or some encouragement so we can go on with devotional service. But generally, it's the seed of enthusiasm. And by the next stages, it's developed, it's purified, it's refined. Throughout Anishita Bhajna Kriya, enthusiasm appears to different degrees and progressively greater and more steadily as time goes on by the process of purification, going from trying to become steadily engaged in service, to giving up sense gratification, to develop renunciation, developing regulation to the last stage of Nishtita Bhajna Kriya before the stage of Nishtita Bhajna Kriya, is that one is able to develop steadiness to a large extent in devotional service, but one still has attraction for more subtle enjoyment, which is given up in the next stage. So that the enthusiasm grows throughout Anishtita Bhajana Kriya, purification grows, and it continues on eternally through all the stages.
So I also have a question about this. So it's like unlimited enthusiasm when you get to the fixed stage or above?
I think the unlimited enthusiasm really starts at the stage when we really understand it's unlimited. Well, we get a glimpse of it sometimes, but when we go from Ruchi, we think, well, there can't be anything better than this, to Asakti. Or we think, wow, this is unbelievable, I could never even imagine it. To the stage of Bhava, which we think, wow, This is inconceivable. And that's only one ray in the sunlight of prema. And then one gets a prema, one thinks that we can't, it's not even describable. It's not even part of the material world anymore. And that's only the beginning. From prema to sneha to mana to bhava, raga, anuraga, to bhava, mahabhava, and different stages of mahabhava, and it goes on eternally increasing. So, anyhow, we're just looking for a little drop to figure it all out. Get a little closer to understanding.
Thank you, Hare Krishna.
Anything else? Kuala Granthiraj, Shrimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.